Welcome to I'm Obsessed With This, a Netflix podcast about the films and TV series everyone seems to be watching right now, like Bird Box, Tidying Up with Marie Kondo, and Black Mirror, Bandersnatch, among other things. I am your host, Bobby Finger, and I'm joined today on this blisteringly cold day in Brooklyn by Christine Fryer, a writer from New York, and Kevin Nguyen, features editor of The Verge, formerly of GQ. Later, we'll hear from Charlie Brooker, the writer of Bandersnatch, and Annabelle Jones, the producer of Bandersnatch. But for now, I'm with Christine and Kevin, so let's meet them. Hello, Christine and Kevin.
Hi, Bobby.
How are you doing today?
Feeling great. Excited to be here.
How's your Java?
Oh, it's fresh. It's piping hot.
I should have gotten two. I'm out of Java, and now I wish I had a second one.
Bobby provided us with Java, and now he's fresh out.
I hate being out of Java. So what are you both doing here? Why are you here?
Well, I guess you could say I'm a real streaming head. If I had to think of what qualified me to be here, it's probably my passion for streaming services like Netflix.
Like Netflix. What about you, Kevin?
We're here to talk about all the memes around Alfonso Cuarón's Roma, right?
Yes. What was your favorite Roma meme?
There was like a week where like every black and white photo I saw on Instagram, I wanted to reply Roma parentheses 2018. So,
I mean, what a dreary collection of memes that would be. Like anytime something terrible happens to you, it's just like a picture of Cleo. Like,
I'm afraid of the ocean now. Like
it's awful.
Just like pictures of dog poop on the street.
Oh, what was the dog's name? Boras?
I haven't seen it? I believe that. I saw it with you,
Oh,
Bobby.
With you. Oh, I was like, that's why I was confused. We saw it at the IFC Center. Mm-hmm. So today, we're not talking about Roma. We could if we wanted to.
We just did.
We're going to talk about Bird Box, Marie Kondo, and Bandersnatch, mostly because they were the only things anyone seemed to be talking about over the holidays, probably because they were shut in with their friends and family for a long period of time. The weather wasn't great. And they were just the things that they decided to watch on Netflix, and everyone could agree on them because, one, it's a Sandra Bullock movie that's new and exciting. Two, it's like a calming woman telling you like how to improve your life by cleaning up. And three, it's Black Mirror, and people are obsessed with like a new, exciting thriller from this show that we've come to rely on as like exciting and good.
I didn't go home for the holidays, but I'm just trying to imagine convincing my parents that we should watch Roma. Like that just conversation would never... So what's it about? Who's in it? And it's like, well, it's going to be beautiful. It's going to be an emotional experience. And then you just realize halfway through, it's like, oh, I don't want to have that with you guys.
I want this to be a private
Bandersnatch
moment.
Time, yeah.
Let's put our phones in the other room. And the moment you say that to someone, they're like, no, let's do something else.
What happened where like your parents are more attached to their phone than you are? Mm-hmm. Like I feel that switch flip like 5 years ago.
Oh, yeah. I don't think I could watch Roma with my parents because the phone rings in their house constantly.
Like a landline or
the landline. And it rings and I was there and I had forgotten how often the phone rings and I was texting my sister while I was there. It was like every 15 minutes the phone rings and they don't answer it. They're like, ugh. Like they'll look at the caller ID. They'll look at the caller ID and sigh and say, I don't know why we have this thing. We should just use our cell phones. It's all spam. And it's like, well then get rid of the phone call. And then you're like, well, we have, you know, this family, it's the only number they know. And if something happens and it's like, this is crazy.
It's like the opposite of Black Mirror.
That's what Roma would be. Yeah. It would be like Cleo experiencing something very profound and the phone would ring. And then my parents would say, don't get it. Don't get it. So boy, girl, we're going to talk about Bird Box right now. Mm-hmm. Okay. What came first?
It's going to be rough.
Never take your blindfold off. Never move away from the mic. We're going to talk about Bird Box.
If you don't listen to me, I will hurt you.
How is this Sandra Bullock movie not called The Blind Side?
Of any of her works, I mean, it would be called The Blind Side.
They were looking through her filmography and they were like, damn it. What else happens? Were either of you surprised, because I certainly was, that there is in fact a box of birds in Bird Box, and not even in Bird Box. In the first few minutes of Bird Box, you're like, okay, this is good. Were you expecting an actual Bird Box? I feel like people, like half of people sort of expected it to be a metaphor for something, or they were waiting for like the end to be a reveal that, this is what, like, we are the Bird Box. We are the birds in the box. I get it now. I understand Bird Box. Was this a surprise to you?
Yeah, it was a surprise that it was literally birds in a box for me because I knew that it was based off of a novel going into it. And usually film adaptations of novels have to incorporate a titular element that makes no sense within like the format of cinema. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was going to be like a random Act 3 throwaway line where like...
We're just in a bird
Tremonti is like, it makes you think how we're all just... birds in a box. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I
probably
thought...
sell that line.
Oh, he could do it. He or I think like John Malkovich could have sold that line.
Yeah.
So when it was birds in a box, I was impressed.
Did you know it was about birds in a box?
I did not. It's strange when a movie is named, a horror movie specifically, is named after like not the thing that's scary. Like the birds in the box are like the good thing. They're like the solution or like they're the helping thing, the helping element in the movie. But I guess I don't know what you would call it otherwise. Like, don't open your eyes or you'll go crazy and kill yourself.
Yeah.
Actually, that's a great title. With Marie Kondo.
There's a lot of tension in that title. Yeah.
That seems like the sort of title that would be like eloquent in a language other than English. But then when translated to English, it's like, don't open your eyes or the monsters will come and get you and make you kill yourself. And it's like, well, in another country, it sounds really nice. So it took you a while to watch Bird Box.
Yeah.
So you had been, you know, really overwhelmed by all the memes for probably weeks before you watched it.
Yeah, and actually I kept hearing about, I don't know, I just kept hearing about the memes and like they all seemed kind of, I just felt like completely dissociated from them and like, well, you know, I've watched Bandersnatch, I've watched Marie Kondo, it's like I can check out of this one for a little bit. And then I watched Bird Box like earlier this week and I was kind of pleasantly surprised how much I liked it.
Did the memes make you expect one thing and did you get another thing? Like,
you know, the interesting thing is I actually, for some reason, I just thought the reason Bird Box was so popular was because of how scary it was. So I was actually expecting a much scarier movie. Mm-hmm. So that's one of my expectations a little different. But the memes are so all over the place for Bird Box. Like, it's not one image, really. You know, it's not one image macro over and over. It's just like a bunch of different loose concepts. So going in, I thought I knew what I was getting into. And then it just ended up being like kind of a more straightforward movie. And that was kind of surprising.
Mm-hmm. You're like, would it be fair to call you a tech guy or tech adjacent guy?
Oh, no, based, I'm tech based
solely,
adjacent now.
Based solely on your employment at The Verge.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
You are hyper aware of social media and like the memes. Mm-hmm. What were the standouts to you when you saw them? Like, were you satisfied by this meme or did you think it was kind of annoying?
I just like, it's weird because I haven't really revisited the memes since I saw the movie, but I feel like it's so strange because the memes are so separate from the movie themselves. Mm-hmm. Like, I just think the entire setup for the memes were just like, there's a blindfold.
Yeah. A blindfold over Shrek.
Yeah.
A blindfold over like a drag race performer.
The
like,
thing that really seems to have like caught the meme-iverse's imagination is not what I was expecting. Like, they just love people not realizing obvious things. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the joke right now. Yeah. Like, taking stills of, like, either people being blindfolded or having their eyes held open and being like, here's a thing we can all agree upon, yes?
I'm not sure anyone that, like, made the memes saw Bird Box.
Right.
Which is kind of funny.
You could participate in the meme having no idea what the movie is about, which is kind of a good thing.
As long as you're familiar with, like, realizing stuff, you and, can, like, grasp the memes.
And the concept of seeing and not seeing.
Yeah.
Like, the Bird Box challenge was probably created by someone who had never seen the movie. Or,
yes.
Like, it would be easy to believe that it was not, which is scary. Did either of you participate in the Bird Box challenge? Were your younger family members into that?
No,
seems like it's
thank God.
Young.
I probably would have had to talk them out of that if any of my family members at the holidays was trying a Bird Box challenge.
No one should be doing the Bird Box challenge, by the way. Do I have to say that as a PSA?
Yeah, probably. I watched maybe half of a Logan Paul video where he did the Bird Box challenge, and I was like, how does this guy get away making 20-minute videos? It was just like truly, truly aggravating.
He's astounding.
Like, it's astounding wild. Is the right word.
Yeah. He and his brother, I cannot believe either of them. So the Bird Box Challenge, for those of you listening who have been in, I don't know, a cave, Bird Box Challenge is when you put a blindfold on and you go out into the world and see how long you can last in the world with this blindfold on. And then your friend films you with the hopes of seeing you fall or break something or get into trouble. And Netflix does not condone the Bird Box Challenge.
Or those friends.
We think it's absolutely terrible. So anything else we want to say about Bird Box? We liked Bird Box.
I liked Bird Box. And if you're a meme maker out there and are interested in the Bird Box Challenge, might I like suggest you pivot your attention to the incredibly fruitful field of driving a car using only the GPS your eyes. That's the craziest part of that movie, and nobody touches it.
It is a wild scene. It's crazy.
They drive to the grocery store using just the GPS, like the built-in GPS, like the Lexus provided or whatever car brand provided the vehicle for the film, like GM's native GPS is up to date enough that they can, like, within feet of a turn drive to the grocery store. And also, I think a really funny video idea would be
take note, content creators, please.
Like, put a camera outside the car and show me what the fuck they're crunching over. I want to see them drive really slow over, like, a Gatorade bottle and think that it's a dead body and be like, oh, and it's just crunching.
Like, just like a gated suburban neighborhood. Like, make sure all of the kids are inside.
It's
or
like
just
Yeah. Like a recycling bin or something.
I can't wait to watch half of this Logan Paul video.
One of the other memes was what's his name? Tom Hollander opening the eyes of Jackie Weaver and telling her to see things. I think that was a pretty successful one. We didn't talk about that. So it's blindfolds. It's pulling open the eyes of Jackie Weaver, who is, again, in everything. You see Widows?
Yes.
She's in Widows.
Who's she in Widows?
She's Elizabeth Debicki's mom in Widows.
Yes, you're
that's
right.
That's Jackie Weaver. But I think we're done talking about Bird Box because that's a lot of Bird Box.
Yeah.
And I want to get out of this car. I want to talk about Marie Kondo now.
Yes.
Great.
I feel like we need Marie Kondo to come here and bless the space.
We need to invite her into the space.
She's like a little nymph.
she's so, I love how, like, how much everyone loves everyone on that show. Like, it comes in and it's like, and everyone's like, Marie Kondo gasps, the guest gasps, the translator gasps, everyone loves
it. I'm curious how much you think Marie Kondo likes her guests. Because, like, my favorite thing is she goes in to hug people and she, like, kind of does this, like, tap thing with her arms and she clearly doesn't want to hug them.
She was told, this is like, what, Marie, you're going to go into these houses, you're going to hug everyone.
Americans are really affectionate. Don't think it's weird. They're going to hug you. They're going to scream. I love that every time she comes back to people's houses, it's like, just one voice screaming, like, from the kitchen down the hall into the front hallway. And you're like, oh, here
she's
she comes.
She's back.
We're going to fold some shirts.
I hope they don't get mad at me. Like, I hope Marie doesn't get mad at me. Marie Kondo is a, I guess, lifestyle expert, author, best-selling author. She wrote The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up, published a few years ago. She's only 34 also. Mm-hmm. Until this show, I didn't know what she looked like, and I was like, you're that young? I pictured Marie Kondo as like an elder, wise, like, grandmother. So Marie Kondo, Tidying Up with Marie Kondo, is what I recently, of all of these, this is my most recent addition to my watch list. I'm not all done with it. I think I've watched 5 episodes.
I'm about that many in.
But I've been like kind of picking and choosing. I'm not watching them in order, which I don't really know why.
There's not like a narrative arc to the season. Yeah. And you're free to skip around.
I watched the first one. I watched like the second one. And then I watched like 5, 6, 7. So I got, because I was like, I got to find the gay episode. I'm always looking for the gay
number
episode.
Number 6.
I think that's 6, which
the
I really
writers.
Like. The writers.
Their house needed some help for sure.
I love when she comes in. And she's just like, this is great. My favorite, Marie Kondo is not like the meaniest thing in the world, but I do love, I'm so excited because I love mess. Yeah. I've been saying that a lot, which is great. Which was also in one of the saddest episodes. That's from the one with the widow.
The widow one. I think that was my favorite.
Yeah, that was good.
She handles it way well. Like, I tried really hard to imagine what I would be like after a 40-year marriage and like losing my partner to a debilitating illness that I nursed them through. And I would like be in horrible shape. Like, I just wouldn't be
she
a
was always like
pleasant. She was
like,
dressed.
She was
her
dressed.
Hair was done. Her house was clean. She was like, there's not a dish in this sink and we're going to throw away my husband's shit. I'd be like,
Well, actually, how, like, the show is pretty sad in weird ways. And I wonder how self-aware you guys think the show is or Marie is of, like, what's happening. Because, like, that episode in particular, like, when they do the before and after, like, before it's like, actually like a pretty organized closet. And then after it's empty. It's
there
empty.
Go your...
That man is gone. You know?
It's it's really sad. And I think a lot of the show's sadness comes from the editing. And I would say I don't think you go into something like this wanting to be sad on camera. I think you're like, number one, I want to be on television. Number two, I want to clean up my house. And I don't really think you go into it expecting to be pitied. It's and like even the family that moved from like the bigger house in the Midwest to where do they move, the LA area?
Yeah, the friends.
And where it's like they're like the Fantastic Four, they're like so exciting and like fun to watch and like in a good mood. But there's also something sad about like they had to leave this place where they really established like a life and like a space together to this smaller spot. And it's like their kids are miserable, but not saying anything because the kids love the parents. And like, I don't think they go into it expecting that sort of like pathos.
Yeah, because it's like the messiness ends up being like a symptom of something larger. And it's usually, defined gender roles in the household that mm-hmm. are like a little too rigid and old fashioned, mm-hmm. or, you know, it's like the accumulation of stuff in late capitalism. Mm-hmm. Like there's always like a weird, bigger philosophical thing going on with the family or the couple that like comes out at the end. And what's kind of funny is like, I feel like Marie is not like telling them that. Like in Queer Eye, I think they would point it out right. a little more obviously, but it's kind of funny watching these couples figure it out for themselves. I think that's especially true of the first episode.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, the first episode. Bleak sometimes, and for them to have that sort of self-realization, you need someone who's not going to be like almost overwhelmingly non-judgmental.
Yeah.
Right?
She's judging
their
stuff. Well,
also like the real calm of the show for me comes from the fact that she's completely disinterested in engaging in the emotional mm-hmm. relationship that people have to their stuff. Mm-hmm. She's treating it as though we have no psychological relationship to our surrounding, mm-hmm. like to the environment that we cultivate. And she's just going like, okay. Like, it reminds me a lot of in Pocahontas.
Go on.
When she is singing Colors of the Wind and she, like, kneels and she goes, I know every rock and tree and creature has a life, has a spirit, has a name. And she touches the rock and touches the tree and the rock lights up and the tree lights up. And they're like, she acknowledged me. Like, Marie is very connected to the intrinsic power of what you surround yourself with. Mm-hmm. And she just kind of like hammers away at that one tenet over and over again and doesn't let people talk about themselves. Yeah. She's like completely without, she forces
laser
people
focused.
To not focus on their egos mm-hmm. in a way that is fantastic because everybody's in a moment of transition mm-hmm. or like in a moment of having to edit their lifestyle or like not succeed at something that they're saying is really important to them. Like the couple that's like, we're married, but we don't feel married. We feel like we live in a dorm or like the family that relocated and they're like, we're in a more expensive city now and we're not giving our kids the life that we thought we were going to give our kid. Yeah. Like everybody's grappling with stuff that wouldn't fit into 30 minutes anyway. And so like the art, the fact that you're even able to observe that about those people comes from the fact that she doesn't mention it at all. She's only talking to them about socks.
Yeah. And it makes me think of the like interview tactic, like silence as an interview tactic where it's like where you let them do all the work by like not saying anything.
And just go, oh.
Yeah. She's not saying anything about their personal drama. And if anything, like she's like avoiding it to like an almost like annoying extent where she's like can witness like a couple bickering and she's like, let's go into your sock drawer.
Like, so anyway, when we
hold
fold
this shit sideways.
Yeah.
What is the have you started condoing your life, Kevin?
I feel like that's the obvious question. I read the book a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And so I think the only thing I really took from it was like I started folding my sweater sideways. And I have started doing that again. But it actually it's just great to be like really cognizant. I feel like I'm actually like a pretty tidy person already, mm-hmm. but like the idea of just everything having a resting place in your apartment, mm-hmm. I think is an important reminder. And I feel like I've gotten a little tidier since I watched the show.
Are you doing this too, Christine? Because I did my dresser. That's the number one. That's the first thing.
I mean, congratulations on starting and finishing. I think that's really where I'm very aware of like the tenets that make her strategy healthy and good. But the problem that I face as like a worker is that I want to do something in one sitting to completion perfectly the first mm-hmm. time and then like not think about it ever again.
It's a lifestyle.
There are steps.
Yeah, steps are hard.
And there's a lifestyle change. Like it's not one and done. It's like you have to do this all the time.
This is a practice of like considering your things. But so watching the show, I was incredibly inspired and like took every piece of clothing that I own, put it on my bed as she recommends and like looked at it all together. So it's like my dresser and my closet in one pile. And I got as far as separating things and to like keep, maybe donate. Mm-hmm. And now I just have three piles of clothes in my bedroom and it's like 5 days later. So I TBD.
I have a bag of donate just sitting next to my laundry basket. So it's like laundry basket clothes, bag of donate clothes, but then like the rest of the bedroom looks good. Yeah. I just have these like piles.
And I'm sure your dresser, like you folded everything visually the way Marie wants.
And I'm still full. Like I have done a load of laundry since, and I refolded some t-shirts and put them back into the thing. But we were talking about this before starting the episode. I do find when you take something out, like when you take a folded piece of clothing out of its spot, sometimes it does, it gets less structurally sound.
Yeah.
So that's, I'm sort of trying to figure out how to do that. And I think maybe the answer is make it even tighter in there.
Yeah, that's the other funny thing. Like when you fold things sideways, like you have to actually pack it to maximum like drawer space in a weird way.
It has to be like a full column. You can't have like a half column of t-shirts because then they'll fall over.
Yeah, yeah. So I actually didn't get rid of a couple t-shirts, weirdly, because I needed it to stay.
Be a rectangle.
Yeah, I needed it to be a rectangle. I love folding my pants, though. I love doing that. Did it make you want to visit the Container Store? I heard it started spiking visits to the Container Store. Anecdotally, people were noticing this.
It didn't make me want to, but I understand the impulse. Mm-hmm. It made me, like, I think more in the spirit of her work would be recycling boxes that are already in my house. Like, I was thinking a lot about how I could repurpose things that are just kind of sitting around because they think they look cute and actually use them to do functional things in my house.
I just went to the Muji store and bought little containers for my office. So
that's great.
And for listeners who don't know, the Muji store is basically pretentious, the Container Store.
Oh, yeah. Now we are going to move on and talk about Bandersnatch.
Great.
Another viral moment, a surprise drop. There was a trailer released one day. Bandersnatch came out the next day. It's a film. It's not a game.
Don't get it twisted.
Don't get it twisted. Did we all watch Bandersnatch?
Yes.
Yes.
We all watch different versions of Bandersnatch, I'm sure, because no two people are alike. Mm-hmm. What was your first failure? Your first wrong choice, mate? What is the line? I already forgot.
Yeah, something
wrong
like
path,
that.
Mate.
Yeah.
What was your first wrong path?
I think it's one that it led you down deliberately at the beginning to show that you could loop again. But like, I think when you go into the game studio
to accept the job,
Yeah, and I did that. And it just feels like it's leading you that way. And then it cuts immediately to that ending where they review the game and it's like 0 stars or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you loop back, which I thought was very clever.
Yeah.
Because I was watching with her partner and I was like, we should accept, right? She's like, that seems obvious. I was like, nah. And then, of course, she was right. But it's kind of funny. I think it does try, especially early on, lead you down very obvious and specific things to teach you how to play.
Yeah. I was thinking about it was actually a review of Succession, and TV critic Willa Paskin at Slate wrote something that I think about a lot when I start a new TV show, and it's TV shows teach you how to watch them.
Hmm.
And she was like, Succession has a really strong learning curve, a high learning curve, because it like seems like one genre at the beginning and then it isn't. And so you kind of have to revisit the original ones with the new idea of what the show actually is. But Bandersnatch takes that to a new level because it literally teaches you how to watch it at the beginning. It's like, are you going to choose Sugar Puffs or Frosties? Are you going to take the job or not? And then like you're like, oh, I understand like the beats of this show. Because I wasn't really sure what it was until I watched it, until I did it. Like it didn't really make sense, even though I was familiar with the concept of...
Well, you also kind of have to meet the characters a little bit because a lot of the choices they have you make aren't necessarily character defining for him. It's just kind of little things that kind of seem inconsequential. Like, you know, he needs to take action right then, but... How did you guys approach, like, making your decisions? Did you have, like, an alignment? Were you trying to, like, mess up his day or...
I was at first. I was trying to see if I could control the narrative in any way and, like, trying to think I understood where it was going. But then the moment I really started flailing, I was like, I don't care anymore. I just want to answer and see what happens. I got less invested in, like, taking care of him as I was playing, which I think is sort of one of the points of the show.
Yeah, I think... It was very cognizant that like a lot of viewers, or maybe assumed most viewers, were going to try and find like the darkest path. Mm-hmm. And it like definitely played into that. That was probably the most pleasing thing about the experience when I realized that like, oh, like Charlie Brooker knows exactly who we are here and what we're going to pick. I feel like the deepest path that I got through like had a really dark ending. And I think is that as far as you can go? What ending did you guys get?
I thought that I was getting different endings because it would kind of start over and then you would try again. But I only got the credits once and then I didn't start over again. And the credits I got were when he dies in the therapist's office because he ended up taking the train with his mom in the past.
So I had a completely different movie to yours.
Whoa. What happened?
Nothing
in yours?
That was in your sentence happened.
What? He didn't go to therapy at all?
What's the most violent thing that happened in your timeline?
I got a few acts of extreme violence, but what was your ending?
The most violent thing that happened might have been the game creator committing suicide in front of me. Did that happen in yours?
How?
Yeah.
He jumped off of a building in front of me, and then I murdered my dad in a kitchen.
I did that.
Yeah.
I also did that. Yeah.
I didn't get on a train ever. Wait, did you guys identify as Netflix or Symbol when it asked you?
Well, I had
you
both.
Were?
The first thing I did was Netflix.
Oh, Netflix. That was my favorite part.
Yeah. That was the best part.
I was dying.
But after you identified as Netflix, you didn't go to the therapist's office?
I identified as Symbol. My alignment while I was making my choice, I decided my personality when I went into it. And I was like, I'm chaotic good. Like, I want good things. I want this character to survive long enough to take me through to the end of the narrative. Mm-hmm. I don't want to constantly be killing him.
Right.
But I don't want him to have an easy time. And so, I was just trying to keep it, spicy enough that he was inconvenienced, but straightforward enough that I didn't have to keep starting over.
I think I got both of your things, because I did that ending, and then I went back and did the symbol.
Okay.
Or I can't remember which way is which. But then, I think I was like, all right, I'm good for the evening. I do want to do this more. And then I came across, an image on Reddit or something that had, all the paths. And I was like, oh, my God, I'll never finish this.
You killed your father, right?
I killed my father.
How did you dispose of the body?
I buried him in the yard.
And the dog found him.
No.
Oh, a dog didn't find your body?
Someone, everything about mine was, slightly different, it sounds like. Uh-huh. I buried my dad, and... Wait, but what, so you buried your dad and the dog found it?
Yeah, but then it let me go back. And then after I buried the dad and the dog found it, then it let me go back to a few choices prior. And
oh,
then
so
I
that was,
else.
The end of your road when a dog found the body? That's really fascinating.
And then it took me back, and then I chose a different... Because you can either choose to look at the book or look at a family photo at one point. And then I did the opposite thing. And then I ended up going back in time to the point where I had the rabbit with my mom. And then I ended up getting on the train with my mom, the train that crashed. But that was happening in the past, but it affected the current timeline. So when he was explaining all of this to his therapist, the previous timeline was happening, and then he dies in the past, which means he dies in the therapist's office just suddenly. And the therapist is like, what just happened? And everyone starts crying and screaming. And then the credits started rolling. And I was like, oh, I finally got a real ending. It was very dark. It was.
I think the ending I got that I liked the most was it ends with them reviewing the game. And it's 5 out of 5.
You know, you
it's
got a 5 out of 5.
Yeah, I got a 5 out of 5.
Congratulations.
This is the great ending. And then what happens is, the game's this big success. And then it's, months later, you're revealed that, the dad is killed. So they're, 5 out of 5 is, but no one should play this game. So they're pulling it off shelves. And then it's 20 years later, or it's a current timeline, and someone is remaking Bandersnatch.
Oh, my God. That's good. That seems
like
a good ending.
Yeah.
I got an ending. I did get one ending, an end of the road that took me back, where he kills his dad, but then they release the game anyway. Did you get this one?
That might be the ending that I end up with, because I buried my dad in the yard and no dog found it. So I just kept existing through time. Uh-huh. And I'm trying to remember what happened after that led to, my game got released and my main character was really paranoid that people were going to find out that he had murdered his dad and that this other game creator was dead. And I can't remember how it all tied together. It's killing me.
The weird thing is you know, I know it's not a game per se, but part of me, as someone that plays a decent amount of video games, is kept trying to find the good ending. Every game with multiple endings has a best case ending, you know, and in video games, when I don't get it, I look it up on YouTube, you know, but I don't think Bandersnatch has one as far as I can tell.
If it's Black Mirror, I think it's going to be a pretty bleak, terrible
ending.
Which
is kind of funny because I actually think my favorite Black Mirror episodes kind of have positive endings, you know, I like San Junipero. I like Be Right Back is a little ambiguous. Hang the DJ kind of has a sweet ending, you know.
I kind of do want to watch it again just to see, because I know I'm not going to get a good ending, but I do want to see the other paths, because I had no idea that.
Well, hearing
it was that complicated.
So I chose the family photo first in the situation that comes before burying your dad or not. it sounds like truly every question you answer actually impacts the result. Even though it's always a binary choice, you're still kind of dealing with a lot more exponents than I was aware of when I was playing it.
I read that he he wrote it on like a video game writing piece of software. I don't remember what it was called, but basically that it's like visual software that lets you
make like
paths.
A flow chart, right?
Yeah, it's a flow chart software, but it like it's meant for those, I think those like Telltale games.
Oh, cool.
I think it's what they're written in. So next up, we're going to talk to Charlie Brooker, the writer of Bandersnatch, about Bandersnatch, and he's going to answer some of your questions from Twitter.
Hello, I'm Charlie Brooker, writer of the Bandersnatch and most of Black Mirror, and I don't normally wear glasses.
Hello, I'm Annabelle Jones, co-showrunner with this guy of Black Mirror, and I don't wear glasses.
Now we know each other. So Emily Vaughan writes, to no one in particular, to the ether, Bandersnatch, colon, Frosties or Sugar Puffs, me. That's me vocalising that. Bandersnatch, chop up the body or bury it, me, chop it. Several people have commented on this, that they found the very first choice, which cereal, really hard. Whereas when it came to bury or chop him up. But by that point, they're so acclimatised or they're so sadistic, they don't worry about that at all.
Interesting.
What does that say about them?
That says that was the first question and the other one was one a lot longer on in the film.
Or it says that they're psychotic. And it is difficult, good. Frosties or Sugar Puffs. I could wrestle with that one for decades.
Were they in America?
I don't know.
Could you get Sugar Puffs in America?
You couldn't get Frosties, technically. You could get Frosted Flakes in America.
God, no wonder people are confused.
And Frosted Flakes, that's a mouthful. That sounds like a joke. It's not. It's terrible. Okay. Joseph Scrimshaw. That's a made-up name, isn't it? Bandersnatch sounds like the word Benedict Cumberbatch yells to transform into a superhero. That is a good observation. But Scrimshaw sounds like a verb, doesn't it? Scrimshaw. Scrimshaw sounds like something you do on the beach when you're, like, foraging around for bits of old tar and stick.
Yeah. And
so there, Scrimshaw.
You've lost some coins.
Yeah, why are you doing scrimshawing around? But then, to be fair, candidate Bandersnatch, it does sound like Benedict Cumberbatch. Oh, look, the swearing in this. This is edgy. Fuck this guy the most, to be honest. # Bandersnatch. There's Robin from Microplay. Yeah, I saw somebody sort of saying he's like the Angel of Death.
Because it means your story's ended.
Yeah, and he pops up and he...
Fuck this guy the most, to be honest. Yeah. Aww.
I know, I've got a soft spot for Robin. He wears a bow tie while he's reviewing computer games, and I saw somebody doing that in an archive show from 1984. There's an episode where the bloke's reviewing adventure games. He's wearing a bow tie.
And lovely Robin, that was the first gig he'd ever done, and he was very good.
He was very good. He was very,
very
nice.
Very, very good.
When Colin told Dude, he's called Stefan.
Yeah.
We've met before. It's because Colin is a PAX. The demon in human form, and Stefan was better than him but wasn't controlled, hence why we decide what Stefan does. I don't understand that.
No.
There's lots of theories over who Colin is. That Colin represents this sort of beyond time and space kind of entity, and is he a demon, and is he God? I like to think that Colin is God.
Yeah, he's my God.
Yeah, he's very much my God. I think he's... love Colin.
Oh, Dad.
Yeah, I'm defrosting mints. Yes, I'm glad people picked up on that because we started saying that a lot in the edit. It's one of my favourite moments. I don't know why. It made me laugh when I wrote it, and it made me laugh much more when Craig did it. He has just the right amount of joy and amazement on his face.
With this newfangled microwave.
Yeah. Why does Bandersnatch have the same logo as White Bear? Because that's called an Easter egg.
And not just an Easter egg.
No, it's thematically, it's a thing. It did come about because at one point we were drawing a flowchart, and I did literally draw on a whiteboard that and went, oh, it's the White Bear logo. Oh, we've got to incorporate that in some way.
A Stefan moment.
Yeah, let's incorporate that in some way just to confuse this one person on Twitter years later.
Crim.
Yeah, so that's why.
Before we move on from Bandersnatch, I just want to ask you some questions and see what paths you would take with these like two binaries, few binaries.
Ah. Ooh.
Sugar Puffs or Frosties?
I think I did Frosties.
I think I did Sugar Puffs.
Interesting. I did Frosties.
So different.
I did Frosties immediately.
That's what I love about us.
Yeah, I don't know what I...
Kick Dad in the nuts or Karate Chop Dad?
I kicked him in the nuts.
I think I kicked him in the nuts, too.
In the nuts.
Gotta kick him in the nuts. You if jump, they're talking about his nuts.
You jump or Colin jumps?
Colin jumps.
I did Colin jumps first.
And now let's go up the rails. Java or T?
Java.
Java, okay. Carol or Abby, the Sarah Paulson character in Carol? Which one?
Carol, because she's titular.
Carol. Your choice comes up on the screen. Do you watch Green Book or do you watch Bohemian Rhapsody?
Oh, no.
Ooh.
What?
Wow, Bobby.
Yeah, I'm really
the
ending,
devil's question.
I'm really ending with the worst possible
We're
timeline.
Learning a lot about me today because I'm going to pick Bohemian Rhapsody and I know I won't like it too.
Which I would probably pick Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah. Okay. So thank you, Kevin and Christine, for joining me on this inaugural episode.
It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
Of course. And before we move on, I want to ask, what's next on your list?
I think my 2019 resolution with Netflix is to find more international reality shows because there are some great ones on service, I will say. Ainori Love Wagon is a Japanese dating show about being on a bus. It's cool. And having blasted through a season of that and then this other show that I think is called Are You the One? Both Japanese dating shows. I was like, oh, I really need to see what other cultures are doing.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Kevin?
I want to watch more of the documentary content on Netflix. One day I'm going to actually watch Icarus. I know it's fantastic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I know I'm going to love it. And instead, what I'll probably do is just rewatch all of You.
Oh, yeah.
Which you. I watched a month ago, but I'm probably just going to watch it again.
You. I'm not done with it yet, but I love You.
Oh, it's so good.
It's good. I need to finish You, and I need to watch the show that you told me about. What's it called? The vacation house where you...
Oh, Instant Hotel.
Instant Hotel. I added that to my... It's always the top, hounding me, but it's the show where you... It's people who have Airbnbs, basically, right?
It's a season-long... reality show with Airbnb hosts staying in each other's properties and rating each other, but they also get to rate each other as guests. So you can't, if you stay in someone's house and you're Kevin, the linens were disgusting or whatever, then you get to stay in my property next week and you can roast me back. So it's both a people pleasing game and people judging each other's decor.
I love a thing where just the balance of power just shifts,
and no one knows about it. Yeah. And they're wait, I've just been so mean.
Okay, so thank you, Christine and Kevin. We will see you on the next episode of I'm Obsessed With This. Please enjoy Bandersnatch, but beware and don't try to get a good ending because you won't. And have fun tidying up your life. Goodbye.